Good evening. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to be with you this evening. And my home group is called the Buckingham Big Book Group, and that's in Buckingham, Virginia. And we meet Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock, and it is a big book group. And I welcome anyone who would like to visit us. We meet Tuesdays at 8 o'clock. Feel free to come by. And I wanted to thank Billy for allowing me to speak this evening. And it was interesting because this is the first, I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I'm pretty new to the Farmville, you know, Buckingham area. And as we were driving, I couldn't believe how long the drive was, because we have people in our home group Tuesday nights in Buckingham who will go to, you know, Buckingham every week, and they live in all places, you know, Madison, Charlottesville, and, you know, Lynchburg, you know, and to me, in the past, I would have thought, well, this is too far away, and I don't have time to go to these meetings, and, you know, these people have no lives. And as we were driving, I just kept thinking, you know, it's amazing the commitment and the willingness, you know, for these people to come to the meeting. And it just inspires me. It really does, and it makes it, my drive is about 30 minutes away from where I live to my home group, and it just makes me want to keep going to the group. It makes me motivated. It makes me want to just think, well, there are other people who are doing sobriety, and, you know, I want to be a part of it, too. It's exciting. And when I'm around people who think, well, yeah, meeting is too far away, or I have all these other commitments, I don't think I have time for AA, you know, I would think in the past, well, I'm going to go ahead and join that group and not go to as many meetings and pick and choose my program. And I'm surrounded by people in my home group who really want AA, who work the steps, and more importantly, you see them on a weekly basis, and you see in the big book, just it says in the big book how happy, joyous, and free that they are. And, you know, it amazes me to see people in the group who have healthy relationships, who have good jobs, who are able to, you know, to be producers of society. For me, this is, you know, all new. And to come in and see these people week after week, it shows me that AA does work. And AA does work if you work it. And as I said, I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I've been sober. It'll be 4 years in November. And prior to that, I was in AA, but I would just pick and choose my program, and I would just think, well, I don't think I'm a real alcoholic, and I would just, you know, just kind of do recovery based on how I felt. And to make a long story short, as a result of that, I ended up relapsing, because I would always try to talk myself out of not being an alcoholic. And I would just keep thinking, well, these people are older, you know, I'm too young, I'm a female, I don't think I really belong. And as a result of that, I had to have my own experience. And it took me to a place to realize that, yes, I am an alcoholic, and I do have a problem, and, you know, and I need to be in AA, and that sort of thing. I just wanted to let you know that I'm starting back to work. I actually teach. I teach, and my students are actually coming back tomorrow. And in the past, and my son started school last week. And, I mean, it's just like normal stuff that we do in life, you know, whether it be, you know, working and maintaining family. And in the past, when I was drinking, I had no idea how to do those things. I didn't know how to do relationships. I didn't know how to be a producer at work. I would just start jobs and quit and just go, you know, just cycle. I would move, you know, have these, you know, moving and that sort of thing. And it is a big deal for me to say that, you know, that, yeah, I've been at this job now for 4 years. And for you, it might not sound like a lot of time, but for me, that's a lot of time. Because usually I wouldn't want people to know who I am. And I would just run, and people, you know, as a result, didn't want to know who I was when they found out, you know, the way I would behave due to the drinking. And then, you know, I'd have to leave. And it's so nice to be able to see my son go to school and to be able to be sober. And for me, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know how to handle life on life's terms. I don't know how to handle, you know, putting my son in preschool. And that's why I need this program. And I thought before Alcoholics Anonymous, I was just coming back the second time because I wanted to stop drinking. I had nowhere else to go. That's why I came back the second time. I've tried, you know, a whole array of modalities and trying to stop my drinking. I've tried, you know, just everything. And I didn't have really no other choice. So I thought, well, this time I'm going to come to AA the second time. time, and I'm going to stop, you know, I'm going to stop drinking. And that's all I wanted to work on. I just thought if we just stop this drinking, everything else is going to be, you know, everything else is going to be okay. But I've learned the second time around that, you know, that it's not about the drinking. I have to be able to work some steps. I have to be able to do what I'm told, and I have to be able to follow some directions. And as a result of doing that, as a result of working these steps, my life is just in a place where I would have never thought imaginable. And I know for you it might not seem like a big deal. I've been in a relationship now with the same man for 16 months, and to say that I've, you know, been able to do that without a whole lot of drama or issues, that's just a real miracle, because I did not know how to be in a relationship. I was just always a taker and always thought, what can you give me? And if I don't get my way, I'm just going to go run off and do my own little thing. And I used to do that when I was drinking. I thought, if you gave me a bad look or if you look at me a funny way, I can go ahead and drink whatever I want, and, you know, pour me another drink. Shame. You know, if you had my issues, I could be able to drink, and all that sort of negativity. And I used to dwell on that. I used to love the issues, and I used to love the drama. And as a result of that, I was just really miserable and that sort of thing. And I just wanted to say one other thing. As I mentioned, that I was starting back to work tomorrow. I'm going to be meeting my sponsor tomorrow, and I made like a little list of things I want to talk to her about. And before, you know, when I was drinking, my little list would be about you. My little list would be about, you know, I'm drinking because, you know, because of my childhood, or I'm drinking because, you know, life isn't going my way. And I would just love to be able to take up people's time just talking all about myself. And it's interesting, as I look at my list today, it's like, you know, my first thing on my list is what I need to own up to. And I made a little list of just some character defects and just some things I need to get honest with. And before, I didn't think about honesty. You know, it's just always just my drinking. Everything was always, you know, dishonest. And the first time I took a drink, I was 9 years old. Like I said, I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My father is 100% Irish. His parents are from Ireland. And it was just a normal thing to be able to see lots of drinking and lots of fighting and lots of drama. And it was just that was just kind of par for the course. And my mom is 100% Italian, and her family, they're from Calabria, Italy, and they love food and they love drama and issues. And you know, so I'm half Irish, half Italian, and you know, I just grew up with a lot of chaos and you know, a lot of, you know, drama and that sort of thing. And I just kept thinking that, you know, I think I'm an alcoholic because of my family, because the way I was raised. And I used to think that for a long time, that if I can just work on these family of origin issues, if I can work on, you know, all these childhood kinds of trauma, that would make me stop drinking. And I entered into that process of therapy. And you know, the more I would talk about issues and family, the more I would drink. And I learned from Alcoholics Anonymous that my problem has nothing to do with family or with issues or with nationalities or ethnicity or gender. My problem is a spiritual sickness. You know, I am an alcoholic, and, you know, and I'm spiritually sick. And my way of getting better is to find a spiritual solution. And that took a long way, because I've got one of those minds where I keep thinking, you know, if I can just work hard and put a lot of effort into this, I can be able to fix it. And that's been my whole life. In school, when I was younger, I was always told by my teachers that I wouldn't be able to go to college, and that I had a learning disability, and that, you know, that I had a lot of problems learning. And, you know, as a result of that, I thought, I'll show those teachers up. Yeah, I'm going to be able to do well in school and make something out of myself and go ahead and get advanced degrees. And I was able to do that. And, you know, I was always told, well, you can't do this. You can't be on the track team. And, you know, I went ahead and did the track team and did very well. And I thought that would be very similar to this alcohol, that once I wanted to stop, I thought, if I can just control my drinking, if I could be able to really put a lot of thought and concentration into this, I'm going to be able to stop. And I would just set up these little patterns and all these little, you know, experiments that didn't work. And I did not get it. And I thought I was a complete loser. I just thought that what is wrong with me? Yeah, I really don't want to drink, but I just can't stop. And what am I going to do about it? And like I said, that my dad's family, there's lots of alcoholism on my dad's side of the family. And when I was, you know, growing up, it just was not anything to do, you know, somehow, you know, just my story is that I didn't do a lot of drinking, in front of my family. Everything, I was like a sneaky. I was just very sneaky. And, when I went to college, that's when, my drinking, that's when it really started. And I remember, my first drink was with college. I was with a group of people. And then they were commenting on the way I was drinking. And I didn't like that because I just wanted to appear normal. And I've done that my whole life. I just wanted to be able to look good. And I wanted to be able to say the right things and to be able to behave a certain way. I wanted your approval. I wanted you to like me. And when they made that comment the first time I was drinking early on about, that's just not, we were drinking like Tom Collins. And I said, this is really good. Do you think we can get a picture? And I liked the way it tasted. I liked the effects. And, for a long time since I was a child, I always felt this uneasiness inside me. I always felt anxious. I always felt different from the rest. And I know today from hearing so many stories and being around AA, you're just like me, just feeling, inadequate and insecure and nervous. And when I had that drink, I just remember that anesthetizing my feelings and my pain. And I didn't have those insecurities. It just it dissipated, and I just felt very, calm. And I liked the way, the feeling of alcohol. I liked the effects of alcoholism. But when the people made those comments about, that's not normal, or you drink a lot, I thought, well, I don't want them to see me this way. So I would just, go ahead and maybe drink beforehand and then go out and drink, or else just find different ways, without being truly noticed. And I just remember just being very, sneaky and telling people, well, I didn't drink, or, just lying about it, just being totally dishonest. And that's why it might sound foreign to you when I meet with my sponsor tomorrow, having to be honest with her, having to be totally honest and tell her I didn't know these types of things. I was always raised in a very good home where we were, practicing Catholics, going to church, differences between right and wrong, good family values. But alcohol just kind of stripped that away when I was drinking. I didn't care about values, and I didn't care about, being good. I just looked like I was good on the outside and wanted to be able to get everyone's approval. But inside, just telling little lies and trying to be able to get away with, trying to be able to get away with the law, if that makes sense. And, so my drinking really developed when I was in, when I was in college, as I said. It just happened. And when I started college, I didn't have that much to drink. And I remember before I drank, my GPA was very high. It was like, over a 3.5. And once I started drinking, that semester, it went down to a 2.0. And I thought, I just can't do that. And let me just go ahead and maybe not drink. And then if I don't drink, my grades are going to go up. And I noticed, just the unmanageability and being able to be powerless, to be able to be powerless over the alcohol, but thinking that I had power, thinking that if I can just manage it and just pick and choose when I'm going to drink, how I'm going to drink, it's going to be able to be okay. And that sort of thing. But what I wanted to say was, I'm just going to go ahead and just kind of fast forward and talk a little bit about how, when I meet with my sponsor tomorrow, my sponsor now and I, we've been working together for a little while. It's been over 2 years. And this might seem like, oh, my gosh, she's just really, this is like a big deal for me to have a sponsor for 2 years. Because before I came into AA, my whole life, everybody thought that they knew me. And, I won lots of little awards. And when I was in parochial school in the eighth grade, being nominated the nicest girl, and then being on the homecoming court when I was in college. And, people thought that they just knew me so well. But I would just behave. And if I was in a certain group, I knew how to be the chameleon. If you wanted me to behave this way, I'll be this way. If you want me to act this way, I'll go ahead and act that way. And I just had it down to the science where I didn't want anyone to know, the real Chris. And I was good at, being able to hide it. And it's so nice because, I didn't know how to do relationships. And then with my sponsor, we've been working together for 2 years. She knows the real Chris. And when I come in here tonight at the meeting, you know, before when I got sober the first time, I would just not want to get too close to the people in AA. And what I would do is I'd always, you know, come in late. And at first, Mark likes to tease me. He's like, you always show up 5 minutes, you know, before the meeting, and that's it. But for me, you know, that's good. That's progress. Because before, I used to just show up late. And then when it was time to hold hands for the Serenity Prayer of the Our Father, I was like, this is just too, you know, goofy. And I would just run off before, you know, before we would hold hands. And I just didn't want people really knowing me. And I'm just smiling because today there's lots of people in the home group that I see that I could be able to smile and say that they know me. I could come in and say, this is where I'm at. I didn't know how to do that until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know how to be able to be in relationships with people. Like I said, I just thought I was coming in to stop drinking. And boy, did I have a whole, I mean, it was just, I had an awakening. But my sponsor, it's just real interesting because I thought that we were going to go ahead and work the 12 steps together. And I just want to go ahead and I just wanted to say that, you know, with her, you know, having that relationship with my sponsor taught me about, you know, having to be able to be real with people. And it's something I still work on a daily basis, and thank God for AA. And I always thought Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help me stop drinking. And I thought, I'm going to go ahead and need a therapist to help deal with my emotional problems. Because it says in the big book about selfishness, dishonesty, resentful, unfair, and all this, you know, resentment. And I thought, well, I need for me, you know, to be able to process that with a good, you know, psychologist, someone who can get into my mind, and we can be able to do some, you know, therapy together. And then there's so much talk about God in AA. And I always thought, you know, I need to be able to have, you know, a spiritual advisor. I need to be able to be in some kind of religion. And I always thought, you know, with all this alcoholism is just, you know, it's just so complex. And I need other ways of being able to help me. And what I'm trying to say is I found all of my needs being met in AA. Like I said, I had a lot of problems with relationships. And I was in therapy. And the therapist would always say, you know, you should be dating people. And, like, I was afraid to date. I wouldn't go out. I would just isolate. And she was like, you know, just don't you want to be in a relationship? And, you know, and I thought, AA has helped me with that. AA has helped me stay honest. And as far as with religion and spirituality, I went personally to lots of seminars on how to get spiritual, how to find God, how to have this, you know, direct relationship. And as a result, it never worked for me. But I have found God, and I found relationships, and I found all my needs taken care of in AA. And that is a real miracle. Because, like I said, I've just always been, you know, invisible. And then when I was in college, after I attended college, I went ahead and went to graduate school. I worked full-time, and I went to school full-time. And I just thought that everybody's going to love me. Look how hard I work. You know, what other person do you know that works full-time, goes to school full-time, plus I pay my own tuition? And I wanted people to acknowledge me. And when I came into AA, you weren't interested in what my accomplishments were. You weren't interested in, you know, having some kind of advanced degree or working, you know, working hard. It was like, wow, this is something new. And, you know, it was just like, wow, this is just something kind of foreign. And when I found that in Alcoholics Anonymous that this is a spiritual solution, but I was always trying to be able to deal with alcohol and life on life's terms on more of an intellectual level. And I later learned, working with my sponsor, that what I was trying to do was to manage my own life. I love control, and I just love to be able to play God and to be able to say, this is how I'm going to go ahead and manage my life. And if I didn't get what I wanted, I can go ahead and drink. I can act out. I can do this. And coming to AA, it's like it says in the big book that we're going to have a new employer. You know, we're going to have someone, you know, that's bigger than us, that knows more. And I wasn't used to that because I've run the show my entire life. And that's what I did the first time when I was in AA. I still wanted to run my show. Excuse me. I just wanted to be able to stop drinking, you know, for a short time, and then just to go ahead and just continue doing what I wanted to do. But the second time around, I was totally desperate, and I really had nowhere else to go, and I was willing to go to any lengths, and I had to be able to have my sponsor tell me, this is what you do. You just don't pick and choose your program. I'd like for you to go to X amount of meetings a week. I'd like for you to meet with me on a weekly basis where we're going to be working these steps from the big book. I'd like for you to be able to get active in AA. That means making the coffee beforehand. That means being able to reach out to newcomers when you see them. I'd like for you to be able to, you know, to call me on a regular basis. And in the past, like I said, I like to manage my own life. I like to run my own show. I don't really want you to know me. In the past, I would have been like, forget you. And I'm just so glad to be able to have that experience, to be able to be desperate. And the first time around, I always questioned if I was an alcoholic, like I told you before. But what happened was I did get my degree, my graduate degree, and I started working in the field. And I thought, you know, why not, you know, working in the field of addictions, of course. Because I thought the first time I got this licked, you know, I've been going to AA, and, you know, I did go to AA, but I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't know what the big book was. And I went to men's meetings because I didn't want to be around the women. And it was in I went to graduate school in West Virginia, and this is in Morgantown, West Virginia. And you know, I'd come in a little bit late. I'd leave before I wasn't not going to hold, you know, hands with anyone. But what happened was, and I was able to stay sober. And I honestly thought that it's because I was doing it. I was like, I'm going to these meetings, and I made this commitment. Look how great, you know, I am, and I should go help other alcoholics and go work, you know, to work in the addictions field. And I've always, too, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous, I've always suffered with an eating disorder as well. I have lots of addictions. And before I found AA, I thought I need to go to Codependents Anonymous. I was an Overeaters Anonymous. You know, I just didn't know what the heck I was. But I didn't really want to think my alcoholism was that bad. And I'd love to go to OA meetings. I would sit there and talk about my story, talk about being bulimic. I can go anywhere and talk to you about my eating disorder. But then alcoholism, I don't want to talk about that. I was just ashamed and embarrassed and didn't really want you to know how much I was drinking. I just felt like, you know, being an alcoholic is not a good thing. It was just easier, more comfortable to talk about other things, the food, the codependency. And just to let you know, when I was actually doing the inventory in OA, and my sponsor in OA said, you need to go to AA. She said, you know, she heard the experience. And I really thought when she said you need to go to AA, I thought, she's so jealous of me. I thought, you know, she's jealous because, you know, I'm losing this weight, and everybody, I was like the AA, the OA homecoming queen. People asked me to speak, and they asked me to sponsor them. And I thought, I really think she's just jealous of me. And then she said, you know, I'm not going to be your sponsor unless you go to AA. And she said, my husband is in AA. He's going to take you to some meetings. And I thought, how dare her? You know, who does she think she's talking to me about? And plus, I was taking counseling classes. And then I thought, you know, no. She's just really intimidated by me. And I thought that in my mind. And I thought that a lot of times. But the way on the outside, I would act really nice to you. And I wouldn't want you to think that I thought I was better than you. Well, most of the time, I thought I was. Either better than or less than. And so what happened was I went ahead and I moved to Florida. I was just moving all these places, and I would do that, you know, often. And not wanting people to really know. And I was in this treatment center, and I thought I was God's gift to the world. You know, I was, you know, sober from the alcohol, and then I wasn't binging or purging. And plus, I'm working on my PhD now, and I thought, these people, you know, are just, you know, I'm really good. And then the staff would ask me, they're like, aren't you dating anyone? And I think, you know, I'm too busy to be dating. You know, I'm too busy, you know, working on this degree. But an AA meeting, I thought, from going, I used to go to the 5 meetings a week. That's how I started. And now I thought I really had things under control, and now I can go to maybe 1 meeting a week. And then I would see clients there at the AA, and they would say hi, and I'd say hi. And I was helping them. And I was thinking, this is more about, you know, for me to help them. And eventually I stopped going. And then I wasn't drinking, and I thought, see, I don't think I was an alcoholic. I was taking all those counseling classes at school, being, you know, all, you know, intense about this. I'm not a real alcoholic. And I was just crazy. Even though I wasn't drinking, and I thought people were jealous of me, I was always, like, trying to get into arguments with people. And I just thought, you know, I would rattle off, you know, statistics of people just saying that the women who have PhDs are harder to be in relationships with because we're smarter and we're not going to put up with things. And just always, you know, like it says in the big book, constantly in collision. Poor you are looking back at Mark saying, oh, I pity him, poor thing. But anyway, so what happened was when I moved to Virginia because I wanted to get a postdoc fellowship, go on for a postdoc. It was just never enough. Let me show you how good I am. Look how wonderful I am. Went inside just being so miserable. And then I went ahead and worked with one of the top five behaviorists in the United States, and he was over at VCU. So I'm going to be here for 6 months for the fellowship, for this fellowship, and then I'm going to move on and maybe be an international professor. And yeah, I'm going to go write books, and I'm going to be so this prestige and status. That's all I wanted. But to your faces, I would be really nice and kind. You'd never think that about me. But inside, I was just thinking about what can I get from you. I wouldn't talk to you unless you had certain kind of degrees, or if you could do something for me, then I'll be nice to you. If not, you know, forget it. Don't waste my time. And so what happened was I started this fellowship in Virginia, and I was working with one of the best behaviorists in the world. And we would have these conversations in the car, and I really like him. He's my mentor today. But he would just talk to me about how alcoholism and addictions can be controlled through behavior modification. And he would say, let me tell you how. And he sounded really good, and I trusted him, and he's, you know, one of the best behaviorists out there. And he would just, you know, talk about, you know, setting up, you know, reinforcers, and if you control your drinking, and you know, all this stuff. And I thought, well, I'm not a real alcoholic. And I was so stressed out as I was working on, you know, all this research, I thought, I'm just going to go ahead and just start drinking. And as a result, and before, when I was in college, I was able to start drinking, but I really didn't make too much of a mess because I still, you know, graduated. I was still able to show up for my classes, still a little responsible. But let me tell you, this second time around, all of a sudden, I wasn't able now to show up for the work, having to lie and to make excuses. And it was scary. And, you know, and then I thought, you know, this is not alcohol. The problem is I've been so alone for all these years. I think I need to go ahead and get a man, and the alcoholic that I am, instead of just being in a relationship, let me just go ahead and get married. And so if I just get married, it's going to take away this pain. If I just move, it's going to take away this pain. If I do research on this subject, it's going to take away the pain. Yes, I just tried all these different things, and inside was just so miserable. And the people who know me in the home group, I'm usually like upbeat. My personality is, you know, I'm just upbeat most of the time. I mean, when I was drinking, I just couldn't take a shower. I was depressed. I wouldn't let you know, but I was having suicide ideation. I remember just, you know, being in a car, closing my eyes, wishing that I was dead, and trying to be able to think about how can I kill myself and to do it with dignity, because I don't want it. You know, don't want you to come in and to see the apartment all. You know, just like finding ways. I was miserable, and I was just desperate and just so sick. And so anyway, I went ahead and got married. And let me just tell you something. I just really took this person as a hostage, as I look at it. And I just remember, like, just telling lies and saying, you know, when it was time to cross the Nickel Bridge, I would go to Elwood Thompson and pick up a bottle of wine. And he was like, well, where are you? And I was like, well, I got lost. I don't know where the Nickel Bridge is. I'm new to Richmond. And just find all these and just, like, store things in the back of the store, the bottles in the car, and you know, just doing all these things. And but thank God, as a result of, you know, working the steps and being in AA, it's just nice. Just to kind of tell you, my marriage has been annulled. I have an annulment, but it was funny because the priest said on the phone, he goes, I don't give anyone annulments. He said, I think that those are an excuse. He goes, let me just meet with you one time. And within 10 minutes of our conversation, I got honest with him and just told him, you know, what I was doing and why I picked the man I did. And he goes, you need to get an annulment. You know, it's just so fun. But at the time, I thought it was love at first sight. I didn't thought, you know, this is going to go ahead and be the answer to all my problems, and I'm just going to go ahead and get married and think, you know, it's just going to be wonderful. And I just thought, too, the car that I drive, you know, he drove a BMW, and I thought, if I just drive a BMW, I'm going to feel better about myself. And just being miserable. Just being so miserable. And, you know, and so I was not going to go back to you people, because I really admire people who are in AA, who relapse, and they keep coming back, and they keep coming back. I don't know how they do it. For me, I have too much ego, too much pride, and I was like, you know, I'm not coming back to those people, because, you know, inside I knew, deep down inside, that you were right, you know, that I am an alcoholic, and there's something wrong with my thinking, and I do suffer from a spiritual disease, and I'm, you know, I'm sick. You know, that the disease is, it's cunning, baffling, powerful. It has taken me down, but I wouldn't come back and tell you. I'd be too ashamed, even though I was in another state. And I just thought, you know, just so, and one thing led to another, and just different things. Like, I would wake up with a black eye. I don't know how, and my ex-husband's not physically, but I know he would not do that. I don't know how I got a black eye. I remember seeing bottles in the car. I don't know how those bottles got in. I remember my mentor calling me, asking me about this research. I didn't even know that I was doing the research. So I had no idea now what I was doing, and I like to be in control, and I like you to think that I really look good. And I was starting to get really scared, but that didn't stop me. Nothing stopped me. I just kept drinking, and I would wake up in the morning and just say, I'm really going to stop this time. Let me just pray. And I did try to go to OA a few times, because I thought, I'm just activated in my eating disorder. You know, I'm just eating too many meatball hoagies. And and so I went to the OA. I would talk openly and just share everything with them. But I would not talk to them about the alcohol. It was just, I was just too ashamed to admit it. I just could not do it. And so what happened was, I ended up, I would try to leave, you know, my marriage. I would just, you know, go back. It's just from the very beginning. Like, I would do things, for instance, for the holidays. I would go, like, consult for, like, 6 or 8 weeks. And everybody's like, that's not normal. Yeah, just, but I would just try to leave all the time. And, I didn't want to be married. I didn't love this person. Just being a user, you know, trying to be able to just get what I want. I thought marriage was the best thing at the time. It's like, let me just go ahead and pull you in as a hostage without thinking anything of it. And so what happened for my story is that I was pregnant, and I never, you know, the feminist that I was, I never wanted kids. I don't like kids. I never changed a diaper. And some people just have that natural desire to be a mother. I never had that desire. And my friend was actually, and we were driving to Washington, D.C., and she's like, what are you doing about birth control? How often are you sexual? I go, not often. Oh, she will use sexual. I go, well, not often, but sometimes. She's like, have you ever taken a EPT test or anything? And I said, no, I would never get pregnant. As a result, I was pregnant. And I thought, what am I going to do? And all the courses that I've taken in school about drinking, you know, pregnant women drinking, and I thought, yeah, I tried to stop on my own. I don't know what I'm going to do. And so I was pretty, you know, I was scared. And, you know, I thought about abortions, and I would just cry and thought, what am I going to do? And I started going to AA. This was kind of like where I thought, I want to keep this baby, you know, safe inside me. I don't want to drink. I don't want to be one of those mothers on TV that drink. So I went to AA without having a sponsor. And in those AA meetings, there's something magical that happens in AA meetings. And even AA groups or meetings, there's just something there in AA. That's been my experience. And there was nothing really, you know, in West Virginia, when I talk about it, it was me that had the problem. Well, I didn't want AA to work for me. And I made any excuse, and I would try to find anything wrong with you to not go back. And this time around, you know, I didn't have that luxury. I just wanted to be able to, you know, to stop drinking with this, you know, baby inside me, and wanted to be able to be a good mom and do what's best, you know, for the child and that sort of thing. So when you stick, and so I just kind of, you know, just, again, picked and choose and did the best I could. And I just didn't know what to do. And just saying, my son's name is Will, and it's so funny because his name is Will because my friend was saying, she's like, even though you don't want to get pregnant, she's like, maybe this is God's will for you. And that's the only thing that got me through. I was like, and that's it. It's like, Will, this is God's will. And this little boy, by the way, Mark would tell you, he's 4.5 years old, and he has taught me more things about me and about myself than I have. And when I first got sober, I was doing this for him. And you know, I just wanted to be able to be a good mom. I couldn't stop drinking, so I thought, you know, I need to be able to, you know, to get sober for this child. And I have to tell you, our relationship, it's amazing. And it's because of this program. There were times when he was a baby, like I said, I'm not a kid person, where I would, you know, want to take, you know, I would take the bottle and throw it up against the wall and just scream because I didn't know how to deal with a child. And you know, thank God I had a couple incidences like that instead of doing that on a daily basis. What I'm trying to say, without you people, without AA, I would be the worst parent in the world. CYS by now would have come to take him away and said, you're not a fit mother. AA has been my parent in class. AA has taught me how to be able to be patient and to be able to be tolerant and to be able to be loving. And it's just amazing, you know, this relationship, this child that I never wanted. Mark would laugh. He started school last week, and I was making him, like, all these wholesome meals and talking to his teachers and wanting to make sure all of his needs are met. And there isn't anything that I would do for him. And it's just amazing. My nature is to be self-centered. I would be one of those people where I would be, you know, thinking about myself. And thank God AA teaches me about, you know, how to be able to be there for other people. But it's amazing. So I started going to these AA meetings, and I knew I was never going to be in my marriage. And I went back to Pittsburgh, and my sister's now husband is in AA, and he works a very good program. And he's like, I'm going to help you. And it's amazing in AA, you know, when you hit the bottom, when you're desperate to go to any lengths, how God brings people in your life. Because in the past, I would have thought, I'm doing it. Remember the first time I got sober? I thought, I'm sober because of me, because all this work I'm doing. Second time around was different. I know God was putting people in my life to be able to help me, bring me to this message. I didn't know what the AA message was. I didn't know, you know, what it was about, what the solution was. I knew the problem. I lived the problem. I didn't know what the solution was. And my brother-in-law, he said, we're going to go to lots of meetings. And he's so kind. He said, yeah, I'm going to come back with you to Richmond. I'm going to help you move. And we went to this club on Midlothian Turnpike. And he told my sister, he goes, I don't know how she's going to stay sober. He's like, there's not a lot. He's like, there's not a solution there. And he says, you know, he said this behind my back, of course. But he goes, you need to go to lots of AA meetings. And then when I was at this clubhouse, I saw a phone number, 434, because I was going to be moving to Farmville. And that number was Mark's phone number. And it's amazing how God works. And I thought, well, I'm going to go ahead and call this phone number because it's 434. And I went ahead and called, and Mark said, and I asked him, are there, you know, women in AA? And he gave me my now sponsor's phone number, Allison's number, and he told me about his home group and shared with me the meetings. And if it wasn't for that flyer, and if it wasn't for him doing that work, I would have never found Buckingham. I would have never found that home group. And it was just amazing. So eventually when I moved to Farmville, Farmville is about like 35 minutes away from Buckingham, and I'm not used to the windy country roads. And we were coming here tonight, my stomach was sick from all the country roads. And I tried to go to the meeting, but I got lost. And I tried the next week, and I got lost. And Allison, I did call Allison, and she said, I'll come get you. I said, no, you don't have to come get me. Because I was like, I can't put people out. I don't want to. Yeah, I told you my whole problem, you know, with the relationships with people. I thought, yeah, I don't want to bother you. I don't want to overwhelm you with my needs. It's okay. And I just couldn't get to that meeting for the first year. And I was shocked that there were people like Mark and Allison who reached out. Like, you know, when Allison said, I'll come get you. I wasn't used to people saying, I'll come get you. I thought, I have to act a certain way, be a certain way, show you my credentials, get you to like me. But just to come get me because I'm an alcoholic and to drive 35 minutes away, I didn't believe her. I thought, yeah, there's a string attached to these people. There's just something, you know, there, I got to be careful. I can't trust them. And when I went to the meeting, that's all they did. They kept talking about the big book. And they were talking about steps and a solution. And there was just something about the energy of the group. And the people didn't judge me and were very, I just liked what I heard, if that makes sense. I would leave that meeting. It was all about me. I'd leave that meeting just feeling so much better about myself. And I thought, I'm going to keep coming back. And they would say things like, get a sponsor. And I would ask for a sponsor. They would say things like, go ahead, go to X amount of meetings. And I would try it. And so everything that they were saying in this big book, because I'm a skeptic, and I had no all the answers. I know better than you, and I'm different too because I'm a woman and you're a man, or I'm younger, you're older. Yeah, I go ahead and do that in my head. But what I did was all the suggestions that were given in the meeting, I tried that in real life. Like when they said pray for someone, you know, when you're upset with someone, pray for that person. And I would go to work and you'd just really try it, and I'd pray, and it felt better. And I thought, wow, what they're doing really works. And I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And then my sponsor, she said, yeah, we're going to work these steps. And then she said, yeah, for the first step about being on our lives are unmanageable, she showed me just how I try to manage my drinking, how I try to micromanage people, how I'm always trying to manage your feelings and trying to do. And I thought, wow, you know, just to make me look at how I've been playing God. And when it came to the God part, I thought, you know, I went to Catholic school. I went 30 days to Yogaville. I'm a certified yoga instructor. I've got this God thing down pat. And, I understand this is a spiritual solution. And what I would do is just go ahead and pray and meditate. I know all my prayers. But the minute I get up from the prayer, or the minute I get up, you know, from meditating, I just go ahead and run my own show. And just think, you know, with these character defects, let me work on them. If I just work on them real hard, and that's not been the case. And, what they say in the home group of my sponsor, this is a spiritual problem. And everything, the alcohol, the character defects, everything I'm struggling with today has to be given to God. It's a spiritual problem. And I didn't think it was a spiritual problem if I was upset with someone. Yeah, I thought it was you. And I've learned that, like I said, my little list, when I meet my sponsor, the first thing is what I need to own up to. And that's just a real shock, because I blamed other people. And it says, you know, in feminist therapy, you know, the way I was trained is that we have to be able to own our power. And why should we admit powerlessness? We've been admitting powerlessness as women for years. And it's like, but I have learned my experience and what I would say in the textbooks if I was writing something. When I admit I'm powerless, when I admit to you I don't know what I'm doing, I can't control my drinking, that's when I get God's power. This is not about my power or trying to be able to become enlightened or power. This is about tapping into a power that has nothing to do with me, and that's God's power. I can't explain to you how this taps in. All I do is just show up. And I thought, if I just meditate really hard and light a candle and chant, this power is going to flow in me. It hasn't been that way. And I've learned the true spirituality. What happens to me is I've got to do my prayers and my rituals. It says so in the 11th step. But what I have to do is when I get up for that prayer meditation, be kind to other people. It says this program is about being useful and effective. And when I'm truly, to the best of my ability, progress not perfection, trying to be useful and effective, and I always thought it has to be profound. You know, I have to go look for that older woman and help her get across the street, and you know, yay. You know, being useful means, you know, being able and being effective. If my son is whiny, you know, not flipping out on him, being able to be patient and tolerant. Doesn't have to be anything great. When there's a newcomer in the meeting, just going over to say hi. And this useful and effectiveness, I thought, you know, let's make this big. It doesn't have to be big. But I know all of my problems today, I have to, you know, my solution, I have to be able to continue to grow spiritually. And I don't like that, because I like to run my own show. And I just have to be honest. And when I'm honest, there's something about being honest. There's freedom there. And when I could be able to get rid of it. And then, you know, God's always there. I always thought God would, you know, God is going to be there if I'm good, if I'm not drinking. But that hasn't been spirituality. I had all these belief systems in AA. And by doing this inventory, my sponsor said, we're going to do an inventory. And I thought, this is great. I've been in psychotherapy. I've been in psychoanalysis. When you go through a PhD program, you've got to do intensive analysis. I thought, this is going to be great. And that inventory has nothing to do with, the feelings or thought processes. What my sponsor had me do is to do it right from the big book. Who are you resentful at? And what is your part in this? And to be able to do, you know, a fearless and that sort of thing. And it was just so new to me. And so I was so used to always trying to go inside my head. It's scary to go into an alcoholic's head. I've learned, you know, even after all this times of sobriety, that's just, our minds are warped. They're always going to be that way. in order to get my mind, you know, to be able to, and I was always trying to change. I don't have to change. This is a program of action. All I have to do is to be able to go to my meetings, call my sponsor, do this program of action, the formula. There is a formula, and if I follow the formula, life some days, you know, it becomes doable. I can't say life is a bed of roses, but life is doable now. Before, with my son starting school and going back to work, I'd be all, you know, the issues and the tissues and lots of trauma. But there's no, it's like, okay, we can deal with this. It's going to be doable. Let's go ahead and do what we're told. And I'm just, you know, I'm just so grateful for that. And I wanted to let you know that just because I do these, the fear inventory and the resentment, the fourth and the fifth step, I still sometimes have fears today. And I do what I'm told to do, because usually when I have fears, I automatically think medication. I love to anesthetize the feelings for me. It's like, I just love the drink because it would take away that uneasiness that I'd feel all the time. And even today, after being sober for almost 4 years, when I'm fearful, I automatically think, just give me some kind of medication. And my medication, and my sponsor, she's like, you know, what you're going to do is to do a fear inventory. And she's like, all I want you to do is to write down your fears, what it says in the big book. You know, it says in the big book, we list our fears and to say why we have the fears. And what I did, and isn't it a miracle today as I did these, I have two fears. And before, in the past, there'd be 500 fears. And so I know this program is working, that if I have two fears today, you know, it just shows that in time, because before I was always fearful of everything. And when I just wrote them down in little flashcards and did what the big book said, and we list why do we have these fears, I put down, you know, my fear is my son's development and his future. And that's a real fear that I have. And then she said, I want you in the big book, why do we have these fears? I have these fears because I'm responsible. I feel like I'm responsible for my son's well-being. And I'm making up for, his dad's got lots of issues. I feel like I have to make up for him. And she said, I want you to write out your belief system. My belief about that fear is that if he doesn't turn out well, it means I'm a bad mom. And so, in other words, is that, you know, my power has to come from God. I feel like, you know, I've got to manage. I get fearful because I feel like I've got to manage this little boy. And really, it's all about me looking bad. And I could talk, and in the past, I would be talking all about this fear that I have, you know, with my son, and going on and on. But you people have taught me that this fear that I have is just really my self-centeredness. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to look like a bad mom. If he screws up, then you're going to think that I'm not a good mom. And it's really not about him. And I've learned by doing these inventories that the bottom line, it usually comes from my self-centeredness. And I thought, you know, as a woman, I can't say I'm self-centered. Look how giving I am. I'm just so, you know, I'm a giver. And I had to learn this program, you know, that this, you know, this alcoholism is self-centered, that, you know, I can be real self-centered. And the second thing, money. Will I ever have enough? Yeah, again, always about me. My needs fill me up and that sort of thing. And it said in the big book, with a fear, instead we let him, God, demonstrate through us what he can do. And I'm fearful about this money because I don't want to let God into my life. I pick and choose what types of, where he's going to come out of my life. It's like, with the money, let me take care of that, God, you do this. But I've learned, you know, in AA, I've got to give everything to God, whether it be money, child development, relationships. And when I do that, when I truly give that to the best of them, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's like, it said in the paper, I am your happy, joyous, and free. I don't have to struggle. It's fun to be able to be in relationships and that sort of thing. And I just, you know, become grateful. I really am. And I just wanted to say that it's just been a joy being able to be, because I always thought it's so amazing. These 4 years that I've been sober, I just wanted to say that I thought I had this plan for myself. Like, I would never think that I'd be in Farmville. I never would have thought that I'd be sitting here in Madison. And I have to just be able to sit back and let God take control, because he does a pretty good job. And, you know, just when I look back at my life and what he's been doing, it's like, wow, God's really working in my life. And I would have never been sitting here tonight thinking I'd be in a relationship with someone for 16 months. This is major progress. And to be able to be happy and to be able to like that person and to be able to share with that person, this is who I really am, and not being, like, rejected. So I'm just, and I always thought, you know, for myself, I thought, I don't want to be with a male alcoholic. They have too many issues. And me and the person that is in my life is someone I met in AA. And to be able to do this together. So I don't know what's best for me. And if I don't know what's best for me, and I try to think I know what's best for you, and I just make a big mess. And it's so nice today to be able to say when I do it, because there's days I do it, to be able to say, wait, I'm doing this, own up to it, hold myself accountable, and then let God work on it. It just takes me to a place I would have never imagined possible. I thought before, I have to give up all these professional goals that I have. No, in AA, I'm still doing all those things, and I love it, but it's not my priority. My priority today, it has to be, in AA. It has to be in God. And all those other things just come, and it's wonderful. And but it's wonderful to have all this energy and to not be trying to direct the show. And it's 6:52, and I want to give us time for the cookies. It was cold. And I thank you very much for allowing me to speak. And I don't know if that made sense, but thank you.